Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle, here today with Jesse Lowry. In the next half hour, we'll be talking with Kyle O'Day, an animal keeper here at Blank Park Zoo, and we're going to be talking about his recent trip to Madagascar to work with the animals of Madagascar. But first, we're going to talk to Jesse Lowry, and she's going to catch us up with what we do at Blank Park Zoo with conservation.
Thanks, Ryan. This is Jesse Lowry. I'm the conservation manager here at Blank Park Zoo. And what we try to do here at the zoo, as well as all the other AZA-accredited zoos in the nation, accredited by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, is we really try to connect people with nature. We see the zoo as a window to the wild, a place where we invite your family and friends and the community to come through our gates and see the beautiful charismatic animals that we have here. The animals that really inspire us all, like snow leopards and giraffe and sea lions, our big tortoises. But when people feel that sense of awe, when they see the beauty that nature has to offer, our job is to turn it into a conservation action, turn it into some type of behavior change that's actually going to make a difference to help our environment and help save endangered animals across the world. So we're pleased to be able to offer that opportunity to thousands in our community. We've got an audience of almost 500,000 people a year. So really a responsibility to help get those conservation messages out and help save these animals that we all care about so much. So we've got a lot of programs here at the zoo that we work with to save animals in the wild, like Plant Grow Fly. It's our pollinator conservation project where we encourage people to plant butterfly gardens in their yard. We've got a program called Upcycle, and that's a collaboration with the Iowa DNR and others where we remove invasive plant species from local parks to help the native plants thrive. We care for and breed endangered and rare animals to hedge against extinction and to shield them from some of the conditions that are happening in the wild right now. And we support field programs, those people and organizations that are out on the front lines working to save these animals. And some of the programs we support are working to help snow leopards, tigers, rhinos, hornbills, and we support them financially. But another way that we can support them is by sending our expert staff directly to the field to support these projects. And a lot of these nonprofit organizations are very small staff, and they're working under very harsh conditions out in these range countries of the animals. And we're a zoo. We have a good amount of people here with experts across the board, from everything from veterinary medicine to animal husbandry to communications and marketing and maintenance. And so beyond just financial support, we can actually send our people to the field to really make a difference. So a few years ago, that's why we started our staff conservation fund, was to send our staff around the world. And that's what we're here to talk about today.
Kyle, you're a keeper here at Blank Park Zoo, and so take us, you're on the small mammals team, so take us through a typical day. What animals do you work with? What's a typical day at work for you?
So, like you said, I'm on the small mammal team. We, I kind of just paraphrase it, we have all the terrestrial mammals outside of the Africa exhibit, so we take care of the wallabies that are in Australia, anything in Kids Kingdom that you see, the goats, the llamas, the miniature zebu, miniature donkey, the swans and the peacocks. They're not mammals, but they're still part of our group, and the koi, the prairie dogs, and then in the Discovery Center, we take care of the red pandas, the golden-headed lion tamarins, and the Egyptian fruit bats. So our mornings, as soon as we get here, consist of pretty much all husbandry and cleaning. Then come around lunchtime, we finally get to eat. And then after lunch is any animal training we have to do for the day, any projects we need to work on, anything that else extra that we need to do. And then towards the end of the day, we start getting ready for close, getting things set up for the closer, making sure just everything's ready to go for the night and as easy as possible for closing.
And you worked at another zoo before coming to Blank Park?
Not technically. This is my first like full-time paid, but I went to a school down in Florida for zookeeping. It was called in Gainesville, Florida, the Santa Fe Teaching Zoo. So I know a couple other keepers here have been there, but it's like you go to get an associate's degree in zookeeping. So our classes were in the back of the zoo, and we were the keepers there for the 2 years I was there.
Well, Kyle, you were the recipient of the Staff Conservation Fund, and you worked for the Madagascar Biodiversity Project. Will you spend a few minutes telling us about that organization?
Yes, it is run by Dr. Ed Lewis, who is head of the genetics department at the Omaha Henry Doiley Zoo. And he has been running this project for, I think, almost like 20 years now is what he was telling me. And he employs over 120 people over in Madagascar for this project of his. And they focus on like doing genetic research of lemurs all over the country and doing reforestation within the country as well. It's kind of these two big parts. And when I was over there, I got to see both parts like firsthand. His organization has planted over 1.5 million trees back in Madagascar to reforest a lot of areas for lemurs and to make pathways to connecting forests. So lemurs have those, like the nature bridges, you know, to get from one area to another. And then with the genetic research, his team has, you know, discovered new species of lemurs just doing their genetic research over there. So it was really cool to be a part of.
That sounds really neat. And I've heard them called wildlife corridors as well.
That's it.
And it's a way that we can connect those fragmented pieces of habitat. And it's the same way that we take care of pollinators here in Iowa, too, is by making those wildlife corridors. So you talked about them working to reforest the area. Why are the forests disappearing in Madagascar?
So a lot of it gets burned down or cut for charcoal, which people use for cooking, because most of that country outside of a big city does not have electricity. And a lot of it's so burned. Some of it is for agricultural purposes. Rice is their main crop over there, so there are rice fields everywhere. And then a lot of it is due to mining, like for precious stones and gold. A lot of corporations are coming in from outside of the country to set up mining areas there. And even like the locals, you'll see a lot in rivers and stuff panning for gems or whatever. But mining and just deforestation for charcoal are two of the big things.
Take us back to your journey. How long did it take you to get there? Obviously an airplane to get over there, but take us, you know, from the airport on and tell us a little bit about your journey there and what your responsibilities were when you were over there.
The flights, it's quite a bit of flying. Took 3 plane rides to get there. You fly to Paris, then from Paris down to Madagascar. And the Paris to Madagascar was the longest part. That's a 10-hour flight, but I've been on a plane longer than that, so 10 hours wasn't too bad. At least they fed you. So once I got there, I spent 2 days in the main capital where MPB has kind of like their headquarters right there. And then from there, I went down to Kinjavatu Field Station for the first 2 weeks. That wasn't the original plan, but my plans for what I was doing when I was going there changed in the flight over. Dr. Lewis always says we have plans A through G because our first few plans never work. So just things out of my control, things just switch and stuff. So I went there for 2 weeks. So that's where I got to go out with some of the volunteers who help collect data for lemur research. They'll go out and follow different species of lemurs in the daytime and the nighttime. And then there's also volunteers there that are doing the planting for the reforestation. So it was really cool to get to go out and plant them because each day when they go out planting, they plant anywhere between 2,000 to 5,000 trees every day.
What were some of the species of lemurs that you saw? What pressures are they facing in Madagascar?
So one of the night hikes I got to go on a follow was for the II, which is a kind of unusual primate species within the lemurs. They're really cool. We got to follow one of those. We saw bamboo lemurs and then black and white lemurs, I believe they were. And so for them in that area, a lot of it's deforestation because the mountain range or side that we were on, they were telling me and if you go up to the top and look down the other side, the whole other side of the mountain had no trees on it. So, again, it's just a lot of the deforestation, but it's also getting the local community involved and wanting to protect something that they have. It's like if you see something every day, it's very easy to take it for granted when you don't really understand how valuable this species is if you don't grow up learning why it's valuable. So,
and I might mention just kind of some guiding principles that we abide by here at Blank Park Zoo with the projects that we support. we work with a holistic view of conservation, taking in consideration the health of individual animals, the health of animal populations, the health of local environments, and the well-being of the local people. And so Madagascar Biodiversity Project is a wonderful example of one of those projects that goes in to help restore environments, help protect endangered species by working with local communities and uplifting local communities. There's really two big reasons why animals are disappearing and animals are endangered in our world today. And one of them is poverty. Another big thing that's happening right now is the poaching crisis. And so by working to find the root causes of the overuse of our natural resources, and just like you said, Kyle, educating the local communities about the beautiful biodiversity around them, we can really go about this in the right way and help make a difference for the animals and the people who live there. And I know that MPB does a really fantastic job. So you mentioned following around an aye-aye, and I know they're a nocturnal primate. So let's hear the story of tromping through the rainforest following a little nocturnal primate.
So it did have a GPS collar, so we were able to find it through that. And me and one of the other volunteers were just tagging along with this group that does the research with them that night. So it is nighttime, going by headlamps up a very steep mountain where the ground's covered in wet leaves and mud. And you pretty much lose any ego you have of your hiking ability going there, because I feel like I spent most of my time falling and getting caught in every thorn vine that was in that forest. And these guides just can run and walk so quickly through this forest, and you're just trying to keep up and not fall down the mountain. But it was just really cool to get to see this aye-aye, because he had two nesting spots, and we just waited till he had woke up and then finally got to see him. It's just kind of a shame at nighttime your pictures don't come out very well, but you did get to see him, and we followed him for about 2.5 hours. So it was really neat just to get to see a creature that most people don't even know exist.
And so when you were over there working for this organization, basically you were the eyes and ears on the ground and working to report progress for all these different projects. What were some of your main goals over there?
Two of my main goals unfortunately got changed while I was in the air when I was at Kinjavatu. But again, that was just out of my control and things happened. So just keeping Dr. Lewis and his genetics department back in Omaha updated on what everybody's doing, any progress, any pictures. And a lot of it is just for pictures for them that they need to keep track of things, and doing Facebook posts and anything involving like the lemurs, and getting as much pictures of the people he employs and the locals that are involved with this, because that's kind of the connection that really matters. It's like, you don't need to see a bunch of Americans in these photos, because they're not from Madagascar. That's not the point of this research. So just doing everything I could for him. And then the couple other places we went to while we were there, we actually went out and did DNA collection on lemurs that the teams would go and capture. So it was cool to see that aspect when I've actually never seen, you know, capturing of a wild animal for DNA collection. And then we went to at the Tapia Forest to actually see if there were lemurs there, because no one knows if anyone's ever actually explored this forest to see if lemurs even live there or not.
So do you mean that we're still working on a census of the lemurs? Like, what species are there and how many?
I would say yes to that. So it's even some of the lemurs that they did capture have been tagged before. Now, I don't know if it was necessarily by Ed's team or other researchers, but still getting the genetic information for them is what's been extremely valuable. And due to this genetic information, they've been able to take what you think is one species and figure out there's multiple subspecies just solely based off of doing the genetic work from these animals.
That's really interesting. And that would have ramifications for their protection. Mm-hmm. Because as the different species are, identified, then we can find out how rare they are and, you know, what kind of habitat they need to survive. And it sounds like they're kind of attacking these problems from two different angles, figuring out what lemurs are there, how many are left. And the other side of it is the reforestation. Tell us about, did you see any tree nurseries, and how do the trees get planted?
Yeah, so in Kinjavatu, in this area, they had, I want to say, 17 nurseries. in each nursery has several kind of like shaded tent buildings where they grow the seeds. So they pay locals to go out and collect seeds within the forest itself. They bring them back. They bring in compost, and they plant, get all these little seeds growing. And then once they're probably around a foot tall of different species, then they're ready to go out and be planted into the ground. But they're also, this year, Dr. Lewis mentioned, they're getting funding to build a whole lot more nurseries in this area. So they're going to be able to grow enough trees to plant themselves and actually grow enough to start selling back out to other people who might want to buy a specific like species of tree or something, I guess. But a lot of locals will come out and volunteer for the day, or they can even get paid depending on what day it is to go out and plant a lot of these trees. But one thing I found out is a lot of the trees that we're planting right now are very fast-growing fruiting trees, so they'll grow up fast so that the community in the long term will be able to use any fruits from these trees, and then the secondary long-term trees are going to grow up after that, and then once they outgrow the fruiting trees, they might die off, but then you'll have a lot stronger forest after that.
What surprised you about your trip?
Watching the whole capturing of the lemurs. Ed has two dart teams, is what we call them, and how amazing these guys are at finding an animal at nighttime, because that's when we did all of our hikes for these animals, were at night. They can spot something just up in a dense tree canopy that you swear you looked at for 10 minutes and couldn't find anything. So watching them and just seeing how well-coordinated this team is with darting an animal and getting it out of a tree. And some of the mouse lemurs were so small that they had to be captured by hand. So this one guy would just climb up a tree. He'd take his shoes and socks off and just zip up a tree. And 5 minutes later, he'd come down with a little mouse lemur in his pocket. So it was really impressive to see that, because that's not something we see here at the zoo. You don't necessarily climb up a tree to get a mouse lemur. You don't dart an animal like that. You know, it's just a very different aspect. So it was just cool to actually see that firsthand.
Another project that Blank Park Zoo has supported for years in Madagascar is Conservation Fusion. And they're a close partner with Madagascar Biodiversity Project as well. And so I just want to spend a couple minutes talking about Conservation Fusion. The founder, Susie Lewis, is also from Omaha. And basically, they work in those same remote villages, working to educate the local community about the animals and the environment in which they live in. And they really work to protect lemurs as well as tortoises. And so Blank Park Zoo has been funding Conservation Fusion for several years, and mostly we fund their educational programs where they go into these towns and do big festivals for the kids and hygiene programs. And a couple years ago, the funds from Blank Park Zoo actually went to build a school. And so there is a school now, it's called the Dream School, where probably 70 to 90 kids from all over that area go to school there. And they have to walk miles and miles, many of them, to get to the school. But it's a really fantastic opportunity for them to have kind of a community center and get some resources and get some education about the local biodiversity all around them. And so we're really honored to be able to support the Madagascar Biodiversity Project as well as Conservation Fusion. And it's neat that it's pretty local to the Midwest as well, that they were both founded by folks from Omaha, and we work with the Omaha Zoo a lot on these kinds of projects.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Kyle O'Day from Blank Park Zoo about his trip to Madagascar to work with lemurs and tortoises on that island. What did you learn by going there?
A lot, just from Ed, with the brief time I got to spend with him, because he was not in Madagascar when I was there, but just to see how one man's creation is doing so much good over there. It's just, it's very interesting to see how much hard work someone could put in and create such great results. Not everyone can say that an organization that they've done has planted over 1 million trees, or that you've discovered new lemur species, and because of your discoveries, you can reintroduce species back into certain areas. And just seeing that at the community level, a lot of people want to be involved with bettering their area and saving species that they don't necessarily have to care about. In the United States, if lemurs were indigenous to here, who knows how many people would, you know, truly care about them. We have a lot of indigenous species here that people, you know, don't care about. And, it, you know, it can make sense, but it's just nice to see people over there really get involved in wanting to protect things and reestablish the community and the forest and everything that's over there. And MPB has done a really great job over there, and it was really cool to see that and hopefully help be a part of a little bit of it.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the local communities and about the people that you met? Did you, you know, some of the conversations that you had? I know that when I got to go to Uganda about 5 years ago, that was one of my favorite aspects of my trip, was to really get to know the local people. And they had, you know, in Uganda, this overwhelming sense of pride and passion for their wildlife and taking care of their wildlife.
Yeah, I think that overwhelming pride, I think you find it in different levels depending on where you are in Madagascar. Unfortunately, I want to say that it's in within every person, but I don't think I can make that claim. But it is really great to meet the people over there. You hear Salama Faza a lot, which means hello, foreigner. So anytime you walk by kids, they always say it, and they get really tickled when you say hello back to them. So they'll just keep repeating it over and over again. So if you want to go somewhere and be stared at and have a lot of attention, Madagascar is the place to be. But the place where we went to, the Tapia Forest, to go to that forest to see if lemurs were ever there, we ended up going and talking to the mayor of the village. So it's a very common thing if you are in a village somewhere that you go and meet the mayor. So the mayor knows who's in his village or her village. And so we're in this village. The mayor was a young guy. He was only a year older than I am. And he was really intrigued by what we were there for. And he let us stay in his house for the 4 days that we were there and went out on the night expeditions with us every night. And he was very proud of the fact that he is determined to protect this tapia forest in his village and this whole village. I mean, his village, though, is, he has probably the square miles or square kilometers, around 300 square kilometers is the size of his, you know, the area that he's the mayor of. And he's very, very proud of the fact that he's trying to spend a great deal of time and energy to protect this forest. And because in this area, there are actually like bandits that will steal people's cattle. So we had kind of like an armed escort while we were in this forest. But it was nice going around with him because we spent the whole first day going around just talking to people who live alongside the main road. So if they saw us in the forest at night with a bunch of like lights and everything looking around, not to be frightened. So it was a just nice way to walk around and actually meet a lot of people that you normally wouldn't get to meet.
This sounds like a really amazing trip, and that you had an amazing experience as well as making a difference for the people and the animals in Madagascar. And we're so excited to deepen that partnership with Madagascar Biodiversity Project as well as Conservation Fusion. And it's important to know that this is the work of the whole community around Blank Park Zoo. The way that we fund the Staff Conservation Fund, as well as our pollinator work, as well as the upcycle program, as well as taking care of hornbills, snow leopards, and all these other rare and endangered animals, is by the community. It's by folks visiting the zoo, because a portion of all revenue made at Blank Park Zoo goes to save animals in the wild. And so that can mean bringing your family on a Sunday, Saturday afternoon. It can mean coming in and buying an ice cream cone, riding the train, coming to a special event. And so this is really a group effort, and we're so excited to be able to do so much of this conservation work at Blank Park Zoo, and excited for what we have for store in the future. Do you have any other fun tips about lemurs or tortoises or any other stories about your trip that you want to share?
So the bamboo lemurs, they definitely sound that we followed, and we got incredibly close. Thankfully, I got a lot of great pictures and video on my phone from it, but they sound like kind of this mixture of a cat purring and the Ewoks from Star Wars, if you put those like sounds together. And it was actually great because one of my last days in Kinjavatu, when I was walking into town, I had stopped next to these huge bamboo groves. These bamboos like grow like 30 to 50 feet in the air, these big clusters. And they always say, you know, keep an eye out because you might see them in there. But they're very hard to find, these little brown lemurs in green, actually surprisingly very difficult. And I stopped because I heard them before I saw them. And so I just waited for a few minutes, and sure enough, if you wait long enough, you'll start finding them in the bamboo. But once you hear their call once, you can recognize it again. You just hear those little Ewok sounds up in the trees. And there they were.
Okay, so let's listen to that sound that Kyle captured.
Well, you can definitely come to our zoo to see the lemurs and the tortoises. I know we have several species of tortoises. I don't know if any of them are from Madagascar, though, but you can definitely come and see them. We do have the ring-tailed lemurs, which you can hear hooting and hollering all the time. So I definitely encourage people to come see them there. You definitely get a greater appreciation for lemurs and how adorable they are when you're over there. So
we have a pretty famous tortoise here at Blank Park Zoo. He's from the island of Aldabra. And many of the listeners will probably know who I'm talking about. His name's Barnaby. He is about 500 pounds. He's 80 or 90 years old and will likely outlive us all. And he's been here since the first day the zoo opened. He's kind of a local celebrity, and it's fun to see when people come visit the zoo, people walk down the hill and walk over to the tortoise exhibit and call out his name. And he actually loves people, and he knows his name, and will saunter on over to the side of his exhibit and say hello in his little tortoise way. So he is kind of a local celebrity and just a fantastic resident here at Blank Park Zoo.
All right, Kyle and Jesse, thanks for joining us today. Blank Park Zoo is open year-round, and you can learn all about the animals of the zoo, special events, and previous episodes of the show on blankparkzoo.com. And make sure you check out the zoo's YouTube channel. You can see videos of lemurs and tortoises on there, and a lot of other videos as well. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Please make sure you join us again for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.